Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, and I'm here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today we are going to talk about some short-term creative financing strategies for flips or wholetails, right, Jeff?
Yep.
So we mentioned this on the last podcast, but basically this is a strategy that you can use in place in lieu of a hard money lender. So if you can convince the seller that you're able to give them a little more money, and if they're able to carry financing for a short period of time, 6 months to a year, then you know it might be the difference between you getting that deal and you not getting that deal. And you know, it could be a deal breaker if you have to bring in hard money, because hard money is, you know, typically, you know, 2 points and 12% interest. So it's very expensive, right? So let's dive into it, Jeff.
So last episode, we talked about how to talk to a seller about owner financing. And we came up with basically two different ways of doing it. Now, there's far more than that, but two that I kind of like. One is where you make a cash offer. That cash offer doesn't work. And then you kind of go into creative financing offers, or more like what we do, where we just generate a number of offers and give them to you all at once.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about how maybe you could use this using both strategies. The first would be, hey, Jonathan, I want to buy your house. I can offer you $100,000. And you're like, nah, $100,000 just doesn't work for me.
Right.
You go back and forth. You try to work something out. You're kind of close, but you're stuck.
Uh-huh.
You could buy it and rehab it, or you could even wholesale it, or maybe wholetail it, but and you still have a little bit of room. And maybe you don't even have room to wholesale it, but you could actually wholetail it.
Let's define that. Yeah, I was, Jeff.
So the way that I define it is that a property that you're actually going to buy,
close on,
and you're then going to list it on the MLS, either doing nothing or very little. So maybe clean it, mow the lawn, maybe a quick paint job, something like in and out, just a few days. You're going to put it right back on the market, almost if not completely as is.
Yeah. So, and really it comes down to how fast you're doing the deal, where, you know, a typical flip or, you know, rehab that you're doing would be, you know, two, three, even 4 months of renovations, and then you put it on the market. But wholetailing is just, you know, doing nothing to the property and just listing it, maybe cleaning it out or making minor repairs, like you said. But it's just, they call it wholetailing because you're doing very little and you're selling it to a retail buyer.
And you are selling it in between retail and a wholesale. So
right.
Then the whole purpose of this is that you can get a lot more money for a property that
is
may
open.
Need some work still, but isn't, you know, a hoarder house or something to that effect. Maybe it's dated. Maybe it still has some holes in the walls, or, you know, something that it's not a retail deal, but you can still sell it just under market. Maybe, you know, a $200,000 home for maybe $175,000, $180,000.
Right.
Rather than when you would be wholesaling it for, you know, $120,000, something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Cool. All right. So how do you approach this, Jeff, when it comes to sellers? If they're interested in kind of getting out of the deal, they don't want to hold financing for any length of time, being any more than a year. How do you go about this?
So let's go back to two examples. One would be that, all right, so I've made you the cash offer. It hasn't worked. Now I want to kind of move you to something else, and where I can offer you more money. And sometimes it can be a fairly significant more money. And the way that you want to handle it is, again, look, I may have one other option for you, or I don't know if this would work, but you know, I thought I'd probably just throw it out there. Probably won't, but you know, I figure I'm here. We might as well exhaust our alternatives. So I knew I offered you $100,000. I'm going to end up going and borrowing this money. And if I could save those costs, I can give those costs to you so you could make more money. And I'm even willing to pay you some money while you're holding the contract for me. So for instance, if it's a free and clear house and I offered you $100,000 in cash, maybe I can now offer you $110,000. And I'm willing to pay you $1,000 a month or $500 a month on top of, and you might do it as principal only, you could do it as interest only, or you could literally amortize it over a certain amount of time.
So keep it simple.
To me, it would be very simple. If there's a loan, I typically say I'll make that loan payment while we're doing this. If there's no loan, depending on the negotiations, there may be no payment. Or I might offer a smaller payment because these are our holding costs that we've got to still pay.
Okay.
And so it might be principal only or it might be interest only. And but now all of a sudden, hey, if the $100,000 purchase price that didn't work for them, now it's $107,000, $108,000, $110,000. And if I offered them $500 a month interest only and I need a 6-month period of time, although I'm planning on having this done in 90 days or less. But let's say I went the whole 6 months. They make another $3,000. So now all of a sudden their price is $113,000. And I offered them some money up front so they feel secure.
Nice. So do you weigh the cost of hard money and then kind of discount what it would cost you in hard money costs and offer that as a solution to the seller?
You certainly could.
That's kind of been my approach. I always like, okay, well, I factor in what hard money costs cost me, and then I try to discount that a little bit and then offer that to the seller.
You certainly could, and that there's absolutely a strategy right there. However, I kind of look at it a little differently. One is that my cash offer is probably going to be my wholesale deal. I'm looking at wholesaling that property if they take my cash offer.
That's a great approach. I haven't even thought about that.
If they take my short-term owner financing or creative financing offer, I'm probably looking to wholetail it.
Yeah, so that's your wholetail exit strategy your wholesale exit strategy.
That's right. So sometimes they can be fairly close. Sometimes there's a significant difference between the two.
Yeah.
So
I've never even thought about it that way.
Yeah.
That's good.
So that's how we kind of look at it so one is a strictly wholesaling process. The other would be, I think we'd have to look at taking this down. And actually next episode, we will talk about exactly that. I'll show you an example of one we're doing right now.
Okay, great. So on this topic, I love that approach that you just mentioned. You kind of have to qualify the property first, though, right? Because it can't be this, you know, busted down piece of crap that needs.
It still could. It still could. I mean, really, one of the things that you want to be sure of is that. So, as investors, we typically look for after repaired value comparables.
Right.
We want that value.
Right.
And we still do in this case too. But now if we're looking at more of a wholetail approach, we might want to look at as-is type value. So where are the ones that sold quickly, maybe for cash to other investors, or were totally dated, that needed work? You can see them on the pictures. The grass is dead. And try to compare those to what you would be dealing with. And what I like to do is I always look at what's worst case scenario. Okay. What if, all right, I think this house is worth 200. I think I can wholetail it for 175. I've got it for 135. I'm going to have to pay some commissions. And we have a realtor on our team, so we can save half right there. So we'll pay like 3% plus like a transaction fee. So we'll save some money there. And that's an expense that you've got to take into account.
When you're wholesaling.
Yep. Yeah. Typically, we're going to pay our closing costs for the seller when we buy. And then we have another set of closing costs when we sell. And we have some holding costs.
Right.
So we want and any money that we may put into the property, which will be minimal because we're not going to do much work. But we may have to clean it. We may have to get it the lawn mowed. You know, you know, if it has this nasty stench, you probably want to try to get that out of it. If a paint job would really make a world of difference, you might want to do something like that.
Yeah.
So, but minimal. But it's still a cost. So when you add all those costs together, you still want to make sure, hey, as a wholesaler, worst case scenario is when you put something under contract and you can't move it, you got to go back to the seller and either renegotiate it or say, I'm out.
Yeah.
On this, you own it. There's no one to go back to and say anything. So you definitely want to make sure you have enough room and including all of your expenses and costs. And at the same time, what's worst case scenario? So, hey, if I'm looking at in the last 90 days, look, there's not one property and there are some really properties that need some work that haven't sold less than this price point.
Uh-huh.
And I still have room at that price point, I feel pretty comfortable.
Right.
Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah.
When you start trying to wholesale things that you have a room of $15,000,
it
gets very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're just trying to weigh the costs of what it would sell or what, you know, what that would cost you to sell it on the market,
yep.
closing two times on the property. And you have to know. When you're looking at comps, you have to know kind of what, not what the fixed up properties are selling for in the area, but what are some of the other dated properties selling for in the area?
That's right. You want to look at both.
Yeah.
Because you certainly want to know if a property that you're actually going to hotel is worth $300,000 and you're going to be selling it for $270,000. That's part of my marketing strategy. It's like, hey, under market value, certainly livable, and because you're catering to both investors and or owner occupants. And what I'd prefer is that owner occupant, except for one issue. So when you're doing this strategy, you got to know that a lot of first time home buyers and people that are dealing in that, you know, median price range and less are FHA buyers. And FHA has a rule that you can't get an FHA loan for 90 days after a purchase.
Transfer.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we do is we want to market that property not to FHA buyers initially. Then we will open it up if after 30 days we don't have a buyer conventionally or cash. That will open it up because now if we have an FHA buyer in the next 30 days, by the time they get all their loan stuff done, it's probably 90 days.
Yeah, exactly. And so when you first put it on the market, you're just, you know, under terms, cash or conventional is what it's being
That's
sold
right.
for.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so you want to know, you know, how much do you need to discount this? You know, first of all, how much work does this property really need?
Right.
So, and yes, maybe the kitchen's dated, but it's in excellent condition.
Yeah.
Maybe the carpets are, the bathrooms are dated. You know, they're blue or they're pink or they're whatever.
Yeah.
But they're in excellent condition.
Yeah.
It's certainly livable.
Yeah.
So to me, those are your best prospects because people would be happy to live, especially in this market right now where, you know, things are so high, prices are so high. That, hey, if you can get a discount and kind of fix stuff over some time,
yep.
I think people like that idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have an example of a property that I did here in Utah where the kitchen was a little dated, bathrooms were a little dated. The house was built in the 90s and, you know, had the original finishes.
Yep.
But all I did, I replaced the carpet because the carpet was pretty haggard and I painted I painted the house.
Yep.
That's pretty much all I did to the house. Just painted it and replaced carpet. And I knew there wasn't room in there for, you know, replacing the kitchen and painting cabinets and putting new hardware on and, you know, putting down granite countertops and that kind of thing.
Yep.
The flooring upstairs in this house was just laminate that was still in good condition.
Yep.
And so I didn't do anything to that flooring upstairs, just replaced carpet in two of the bedrooms. Didn't do anything in the bathrooms. And then I put it on the market and was able to sell it pretty quickly.
For retail or close to retail?
Close to retail, yeah.
We did the same thing. I mean, we actually bought a property and we could probably talk about this. Well, maybe I'll save this example again for next episode.
Okay.
But we basically created owner financing with a small amount down, took over, went in. We could not buy it for cash. It was not going to be a wholesale deal. And we made a deal out of where there was not a deal. And went in, cleaned some carpets, did a few things, were done in like 3-4 days, put it right back on the market. Had to wait because we did get FHA buyers, but they all paid full market. It wasn't all updated, but it was a good price point in a market that's very competitive right now. And yeah, we had to wait the 90 days because our buyer was an FHA buyer, but little to no money spent, seriously, less than like $1,000 maybe. So
that's awesome.
And immediately, if it was a cash buyer, we would have been done in less than 30 days. But that's, these are the things that you got to look at and you got to plan for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had another property where I've just literally cleaned the junk out.
Yeah.
Just cleaned the junk out.
Yep.
It still needed a ton of work, but that's all I did. I sold it to another investor. But it was a wholesale deal for me.
Yep. Well, think about the wholesale in some respects are if you're a wholesaler and you bought a property for a wholesale price and you're now moving it and you're going to assign your contract and let's say you're going to make $15,000. If you bought that same property, chances are very good that you could put it on the MLS and make 25 or 30,
exactly,
minus some costs, but and maybe more. Your audience is much bigger.
Yeah, you're just opening it up to a bigger pool of buyers, and that's exactly what I did on that one I just mentioned, where I just cleaned it out. I just knew that I could wholesale it for 15. I knew I could do that, but if I was to close on it, clean it out, open it up to a bigger pool of buyers, I made 25 on it.
There you go. So, after all the expenses.
After all the expenses. Yeah, exactly.
And that's so. Here's the disclaimer when you're looking at doing a wholesale. There's still got to be a significant amount of room.
Yeah, of equity.
Because you do have these expenses and you will own it. So when you own a property, you have some risk.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that you don't think that you're going to go wholesale all these deals that are pretty slim margins because you're going to get yourself into trouble that way.
Yeah. And just kind of, a general way to look at it, like if your wholesale price is 50% of, you know, ARV, you can probably pay a little more for it and you might be able to wholesale it. So you might be able to pay 60% of ARV, put in a little money and still sell it for 70, 80, 85, whatever.
Yep. And as long as you're able to still leave a good deal on the table, you'll probably be just fine.
Right.
So we talked about the first way is you make your cash offer and then you move into this offer when your cash offer doesn't work.
Of short-term financing.
The second way is what we do, where we create an LOI and that offer is almost just automatic. And so if you were thinking about how do I come up with different offers for my LOI, this one's a fairly simple one. Here's your cash offer of, you know, $150,000, and here's your, you know, short-term owner financing for $158,000, $162,000, $154,000. Yep, something more, but and it probably needs to be at least something that would make sense for the seller to look at.
Right.
And short term. So It might be maybe you're more comfortable with 12 months in this market. To be honest, if we have the property on the market and when the first week or two and it's not sold in 6 months, I mean, we've got a total problem on our hands.
Yeah.
So that's what we like to do. That's almost always another potential offer, even when someone may say, I'm not interested in terms. So our LOI will come with a cash offer, and that may be the only offer, but we'll throw in this one. It's like, because it's really, it's short term.
What do you state in that offer? Like, is it like down payment this?
Yeah. So purchase price would be, so what I like to do is I say option one and
cash.
So what I do is I like to have cash as my last option. So I like to start from highest to lowest.
Okay.
So owner financing is always higher than cash.
Right.
And if you're not getting that, you need to go back and listen to episodes because you can always offer more with owner financing than you can with cash.
Right.
What we do is we'll put whatever type of owner financing it will be. So if it's contract for deed, I'll write owner financing.
Okay. So let's keep this specific to just the short term.
So it could be a contract for deed, it could be a trust deed and note, it could be an all-inclusive trust deed and note, or it could be subject to, could be any number of those depending on what the situation is. So most likely it's not a subject to, most likely it's going to be either a trust deed note
or contract for deed.
Yeah. Depending on. And I'd prefer, me personally, I'd prefer it to be where I got
title. So
just because I want it to be very clear of what we're doing. I could still do it with contract for deed, but it wouldn't be my first choice.
Right.
So let's say owner financing, trust deed and note, or all-inclusive trust deed and note. Then I'll have purchase price, down payment, however I'm going to deal with any monthly payments. So there may be an interest rate. There will be a monthly payment. I will make it clear that does not include their taxes and insurance, which I am also responsible for. And then a balloon payment and a term. So term 6 months, balloon payment of this much. And then I write in a few other things like, I'll be responsible for all the maintenance and repairs, the taxes and insurance. I will have the tax benefits, although I'm not really worried about tax benefits when I'm trying to flip this house.
Right.
When the first payment will begin, and it depends. Most of the time on this offer, it's 30 days after closing, but sometimes I ask for 60 just because. And then I may even have an explanation of what this particular type of financing is. So on contract for deed, I like to include a little paragraph about, hey, it's like buying a car at the car dealership. You own it, but, title remains with the bank until you pay it off, something like that.
Right.
All inclusive would be this happens every day all over the country. Title does transfer. You're secured by a trust deed and note on the property. If there was to be a default, you have the remedy of foreclosure, that kind of stuff.
So you become the bank.
Right. So that's it. That's my LOI.
Great. So when you're evaluating these deals, do you do anything different? So just looking at it, if you're going to flip the property versus wholetailing, how do you just distinguish if you're going to flip it or wholetail it?
And there's a number of different ways that you can look at this. So let's go back to when you were talking about, maybe my owner finance or my creative financing should just be what it would cost me in hard money.
Uh-huh.
So what if you did this? What if you knew exactly, and sometimes we do this, sometimes we don't. But if there's some leeway that you can leave yourself so that you have some negotiation power. So right now in the markets that we work in, our cash offer price is pretty straightforward. ARV times 80% minus repairs.
Minus your wholesale.
Is our MAO, maximum allowable offer. That's typically what we're going to sell it to another rehabber.
Right.
Minus our wholesale fee.
Yeah.
Okay. So if we come in, let's say we have a $200,000 home, and which those don't exist much right now, but let's say $300,000 home.
Okay.
And so we take 80% of that, that's 240. Let's say, just for easy math, $40,000 in repairs. So our MAO is 200,000. Is that right? Yes, 200,000. And minus our wholesale fee, so we might make at least 15,000. Uh-huh. So our offer to the seller is about 185. And if we start paying any more than that, it's cutting into our wholesale fee.
Right.
So wouldn't it make sense to maybe offer a little less so we have a little negotiation room? So make the seller feel like they're satisfied with what offer they got. So maybe we go in at 175, and we have, if we get it, bonus, right?
Yeah.
And if we don't, then we have some
up.
Right. We have some negotiation room.
Yeah.
So maybe our other offer is 183. So it's still even below our wholesale costs, and we still have some room to negotiate on that offer as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you can still come up on that.
Yeah. And if they take that one, I'm fine with it. And really what the goal will be is whether we wholesale it or wholesale it will be how much work does it need?
Yeah.
So if it just needs updating, cleaning, that's a wholesale prospect. If it needs a new roof, it needs more in-depth, something that may scare away an owner-occupant, I'd probably just want to wholesale it.
Yeah.
So any cosmetic stuff doesn't bother me.
Right.
So if it's in a good area, and you can certainly look through your comps before you decide to do this. Hey, is this an area that people want to live in? Is there good activity going on in this area? How many sales have gone on in this area? How many cash sales have there been in this area? So you can quickly find out if it's an area that would be popular right now that would move quickly.
Yeah, yeah. And the way I've determined it in the past is just where do I make more money? So can I wholesale it for, 15, or can I wholesale it for 25?
Right.
So that's how I've analyzed my deals in the past.
Yep. Well, I would tell you, if that's the only analysis you're doing, you better be able to make more money wholetailing it. Otherwise, you're defeating the whole point.
Yeah, of course.
And so to make 25 would probably mean that you're expecting to sell it for $45,000 profit initially.
Right, right.
Because you got those expenses.
Yeah. And I do evaluate all those expenses.
Yeah.
So I take whatever I think I could sell it for. And then times that by 0.93, that takes off my realtor costs, my title fees, and then whatever I have into it, my closing costs for buying it, and then what profits I want to make. So I kind of back out from the purchase price that way. But yeah, anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. That's how I evaluate it. Like, where will, if I can make more money wholetailing it, I will do that versus wholesaling.
Sure.
Just to maximize my profit.
Sure. So. And some of them, right now in this market, sometimes you can get even more than what you would think just by being in a certain price point. So
yeah, we're waiting a couple months.
Yeah.
Because the market goes up so fast.
Well, and the way that I look at it too is that I'm going to hesitate to want to do a wholetale if I have to go get hard money. So I better have even a bigger spread. I better be even more confident that I can move this, because, and what we'll talk about this next episode, but if you're doing a $300,000 home, a lot of times a hard money lender is going to want you to have some skin in the game.
Yep.
Anywhere from 10 to 20%.
Yeah.
Unless you have some kind of ongoing relationship.
Yeah.
So you're going to have 30 grand probably minimum.
Right.
Your payments are going to be like 1% a month.
Yep.
That's significant.
That is.
And you're going to pay a couple of points. That's another $5,000+. All of a sudden, on this, you know, median type price range home, it's incurring a good amount of cost very quickly. There better be a pretty large spread, because if you don't take that into account, it could bury you.
Absolutely. I agree.
So I don't like, if I can work out my short-term owner financing,
way better than bringing on hard money costs, for sure. And it's literally, it can make or break the deal for you. Like in a slimmer margin deal like that, if you have to bring in all these hard money costs, it just doesn't work at that point.
Well, so, and think about this too, because we really haven't discussed this, and I bet we're running out of time. So really quickly, if you structure this and it gets accepted and you want to rehab, or you're going to wholesale it to a rehabber, how much more does this deal become like special, where there is no hard money needed? So you're catering to a much bigger audience. It's saving a bunch of money. I mean, just on this $300,000 home, you're talking $5,000, $5,400 up front. $30,000 down, as opposed to, you know, a small amount down. And it's potentially $2,700 a month in interest that's accruing. You know, if you look at it over 6 months, that's $15,000-$17,000 in interest, compared to if I made $1,000 a month payment. Or considerably different.
And that's a good point, because really we just wanted to talk about this, because you don't always have to think in long term with creative financing.
Right.
You can think in the short term, and that is a creative solution. If you're able to offer the seller more and, you know, some payments over a 6 month period of time, that's not a long time to sell them on it, especially if they want, you know, the majority of their money quicker. So it's just another creative solution that you can use in your business when you're talking to a prospect, and, you know, that can make or break the deal.
Yep. Well, and the way that you tend to get this, get the seller comfortable, is you offer them more down payment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's like, what if we can give you more money?
Yeah.
Great. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thanks, Jeff. That's awesome. You kind of opened my eyes to, you know, the whole, like the way you guys look at it, you know, wholesale versus wholetail. I love that. So hope our audience got some value out of that as well. And maybe we just open their eyes to, like, oh, I didn't even think about doing that in, you know, in a short term place for hard money. So we'll end it there. Thanks, guys, for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast if you have not already. We need as many subscriptions as we can, so that we can rank higher on the charts, we can get out there to more people, so that we can continue to do this for you guys. So please subscribe, leave us a review. Also, we have a hotline that we would love to start getting some calls in on. Our hotline number is 877-409-8090. Again, 877-409-8090. And call in with any questions you have or comments. I would love to present that to Jeff, whether it's a specific deal or situation, whatever. We would love to get some feedback from you guys. If you want to reach us on the web, we're at www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com. So you can reach us there. Any last words, Jeff?
I hope this was beneficial to people. It's something that really, if you're new to creative financing, it's something you could implement right away.
Yeah, that's a good point, because it's just easy.
Yeah, it really is.
Cool. Until next time, create some terms.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.